Welcome everybody to the Friday, well it's not the Friday, it's the Saturday Inner Space talk. We didn't have one yesterday because it was Christmas Day. So today we have Trish. Trish is joining us from Vietnam, and she's going to be speaking on how to be alone but not lonely. Because loneliness means that we're feeling isolated, cut off. It means that we don't have meaningful connections. And so Trish is going to be sharing with us how to not just connect meaningfully with other people, but with ourselves, to have that experience of love, of support, of being cherished, I'm sure. So Trish Summerfield is originally from New Zealand. She spent a lot of her life in Vietnam, but in Cambodia. She's done amazing things with the Khmerush people, and also Japan. And I've known Trish since Japan, so we've connected over the years. She is an author, a TV presenter, a personal development and values education trainer. So Trish, we're going to hand over to you. To everybody else, the final notice is really Trish will be happy to take your questions at the end. So after her talk, Trish is going to do a short meditation, and then I will be taking the questions you send in via the question and answer link in your email, and I will be putting them to Trish on your behalf. So Trish, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Auntie. Thank you also for that introduction. And really lovely to be with everyone today. Greetings of this season. And, you know, I appreciate all around the world, and particularly in the UK, that this is a very unusual time that we are going through. And so today I would like us to walk through a process. And, you know, I work in education. I think many of you might be familiar that there's a lot of research on how we learn best. Just appreciating that when we look at learning, we find that we learn better when we experience something. You know, I'm sure you found when you're raising children, you can give them a lecture on and on and on, and they will retain something. But if they experience something, if they observe an action of a parent or a teacher that is in some way positive or inspiring, and they take that inside, then that stays with them much longer. Even also the opposite is true, isn't it? So today, as much as possible, what I would like to do is make this experiential, given, you know, the confinements of Zoom and all of that. But I will invite you to participate wherever I can. And I'd like you to think back to the beginning of the lockdowns. And I think we all perhaps entered at different periods. But when we entered lockdown, I think something that we all shared, we spent a lot more time inside our houses, right? And you know, when you spend a lot of time at home, I don't think I'm alone in this, you notice things about your house, your interior, the design, maybe something that's a bit old, a bit broken. You notice things that you like and don't like. And I know that so many of us did, you know, revamping of our houses. We bought more furniture. That also actually helped Vietnam, because a lot of furniture comes from Vietnam. And so although the economy went down dramatically, it went up a lot in furniture, because around the world people were buying furniture. And so I also did some renovations in the room and the area where I lived. And so when we spend more time at home, we notice things about the house, yes? And the same is true about our inner house. And I like to call it the palace of the mind. When we spend more time at home and alone, we notice more about what's happening inside. And so I think very much central to this aspect of being alone but not lonely is exploring what is happening inside the palace of my mind and what the design, what I'm decorating it with. And if we take a walk through the palace of the mind, often we can appreciate the beauty of the mind and what I'm holding within it. But also there'll be things that we might see, we might like to make changes to. Just as when we look around our physical house, we will notice things. And so what I would like to do is really invite us to take a walk through the palace of our mind. And if you think about it, the first place is to go in the door. And I'd like you really just to imagine that you're entering the palace of your mind. And as you go in, you open the door, you go in. On the left, there is another door, and on it is the room of the self. And I want you just to open that door and go inside. And inside that room, you have decorated with images, all connected to the way that you perceive yourself. And there might be a lot of very beautiful images of how you see yourself and your value, your uniqueness, your strengths. But also within that, there may be some that are not so shiny, maybe some that might be a little bit broken. And really, for most of us in the world, we hold a perception of ourself from one of three different aspects. And I think perhaps one of the most challenging of them is when we see ourselves as having less value than others. And we call that inferiority. And we look out at the world and we feel that we have less value, maybe based on whatever measure we might use. It might be something physical, it might be intelligence, it might be possessions, but we judge ourselves as being less than others. And, you know, recently I worked with one lady here, and she was 50 years old, very, very wealthy, very talented. But she said, I always feel inferior. I always feel that I have less value than others. And she felt very uncomfortable with herself and to be with herself, really, and certainly to be alone. And when we looked at it, she shared with me that when she was growing up, it was post-war, but it was a time of a lot of poverty. So every day her mother would make breakfast for the family. And at the time when the family was going to eat it, every day the neighbor, that was obviously in a very difficult situation, would ask for food from the family. And the mother would give food. And what happened is that this young lady would very often not get her breakfast because her mother would give it to the neighbor. And, you know, as children, often we blame ourselves when things like that are happening. So this young lady formed the belief, because her mother gave her breakfast away each day, she went to school hungry, that she wasn't worthy, she wasn't valuable. And from that time of, you know, a young girl until 50, she lived with that belief. And of course, once we worked together, she understood and she stopped blaming her mom. And she realized, obviously, the mother did the best that she could in that situation. And it didn't mean that she, as a young girl, had no value. It just meant that meant that that mother made, or her mother made, the best choice possible. And so, you know, sometimes things have happened as we've grown up and we've formed a belief where we see ourselves as less than valuable and we look out at the world in that way. And so this is one kind of a belief that we can have that really doesn't serve us well. And when we have to be alone, it makes us also feel very uncomfortable. And then when we go over to the other extreme, it is that I feel I'm superior, I'm better than you, I have more value and you have less. And again, you know, although that might give us some level of sweetness, it's so temporary because we get our value by putting others lower than us. And again, not comfortable to be alone and also insecure because sometimes someone will come along that is better than me. And then again, I feel threatened. Yet if we are able to move into the middle and really form a sense of who we are based on our inner self, beyond the aspects of the outer, and really feel that I am so unique, I am valuable, and no one can be me but me, and that I always have the opportunity to grow and develop myself. And you know what happens when I really feel that from my heart and work with that, and I look out at the world, automatically I see value in others and I see uniqueness in others, and I'm not threatened by them anymore and I don't compare. So I think a big part of, you know, this lockdown and being alone is to really go into this room and just check. How am I seeing myself? Which one of these three am I living my life from? Because if I'm in either of the outer sides, I'm going to have discomfort and I'm going to feel uncomfortable to be alone with myself because the relationship is not one of love. And so what I would invite us even now is just take a step into the middle. If you're not there, and you may be, and you may live your life from there, and that's wonderful. But if you feel that you're either to the right or the left, step into the middle and just feel your value and your own innate uniqueness that no one in the whole world can play your role but you, and no one can replace you, and that you have your own innate inner beauty. And just really connect with that and experiment looking out at the world from that space. I'm just going to invite us to have a minute's silence with that. So feeling my own unique value, really almost breathing it in deeply, taking the air, filling the lungs, breathing in your own unique value. And looking out at the world with that deep feeling of security and self-love, knowing that no one can play your role but you, and that you have the capacity within you to face whatever challenge. And now that we're in this room, just look around the walls and the decor. Maybe there's some images there. And just check, is there anything that you would like to adjust in this room? Is there any changes that you'd like to make? And I know for myself recently, I was thinking about this room, and I know for me, I have a little bit of a thing where sometimes I am not patient with myself. So I felt, let me fill the room with an image that reminds me to be patient with myself. And so I put the image of some flowers, like the one behind me. And that just reminds me, when I think of it, to be patient with myself. And so this is the first room, the room of the self. Let's take one more look around it. And maybe even tell yourself, tomorrow I'll come back again. I'll just check how it is and what I'm positioning, what I'm keeping within that room. And maybe I'll check if I've been living in the middle with that sense of value, or if I'm out to the side, either inferiority or superiority. But let me live in the middle with security, deep, deep inner security, at a time when the world is feeling so insecure. So I'm going out of that room and I close the door. And now as I walk down the hallway, it's beautifully lit. And on the right, I see another room. Now this one is also really important. And on the door, it has a sign. And it's the room of my relationships. And often we say, what gives you most happiness in your life? And the opposite, what can give you most unhappiness? And often the answer is the same: relationships. It's a very important one. I enter that room. And in that room, I have photos on the wall. And I have photos of all the important people in my life. And so I just want you to look around at, maybe choose 5 or 6 of the most important people in your life. And as you go past their photo, it could be relatives, it could be people you work with, live with, just see how you hold each one in your mind. It's almost like we take a photograph of people. Then when we hear their name or we see them, we create a certain memory of them. And that will give us comfort or discomfort. And so as you walk around the room and you think of all the key people in your life, and you look at their photos, just check how you're holding them in your mind. And perhaps ask yourself, are you holding them in your mind in a way that you would like them to hold you? Are you holding them in your mind in a way that brings you happiness and comfort? And it's a big question, isn't it? And it's probably something that you do often, but I remember researching for one program we were doing on TV, and we looked at some research on couples, and I remember one of the researchers, it reported that before people get married, if you ask them to describe their partner, they give a very, very long list of all their positive attributes. You know, perhaps even the partner may be a smoker, and they might say, well, it's very fashionable. Whatever it is, it will be very, very positive. And, you know, the the opposite side will be almost non-existent. Yet, when the researchers go back after 5 years or 10 years, and after those couples have got married, what do you think they find? Often the story is the opposite. And when they're asked to describe their partner, they come with a long list of the opposite side. And so if when I go in my room of relationships and if I look at the photos and I'm holding people in my mind in a way that is focusing more on what is not there or their weakness, then let me understand that really the first person that will suffer is myself. Because if I'm seeing the weakness in another, there's no way I can feel good about myself. And you know, this morning I was at a university and I was working with first year students, 400 of them. And it's part of a program we're doing for TV. And we're looking at, you know, suicide rates of young people, particularly after they've had a very bad experience online of criticism. And, you know, we looked and we talked about this and we said, look, those people that criticize online, there is no way that they can be feeling good about themselves. Because if we're feeling good about ourselves, we can't speak unkindly. So it's really a very obvious sign that the people that are doing the criticizing are not feeling good. And I'm sure we're not like that. We're not people that would criticize online, but still, if we are seeing the weakness in others, it's going to damage ourselves. And so, of course, the first room is the room of the self and building that deep feeling of self-respect from the inside and then allowing that to flow into my relationships. So I'm able to look for the beauty and appreciate the beauty in the other person. And you know, one thing that really helps with this and something that I've worked with a lot is reducing expectations. And I think particularly at this time of the virus that, you know, we have to give each other space and we have to understand that each of us will respond in a different way. And we may not say, look, I'm feeling worried, I'm feeling afraid, but we might just behave in a way that's a bit difficult. So I think we need to give each other space and understand that sometimes we'll experience behaviors from people that are close to us that may not be so conducive, but just give space, understand that person's going through something. So if I can reduce my expectation and increase appreciation, look for good, then we will enjoy the people that we're with much, much more. And particularly if we are in lockdown with them and, you know, we're in very close confined areas, perhaps much more so than we have been before, like really appreciating. So I'd just like us to spend another minute in this room looking around at the photos of the key people that I have in my life. It might be the people I live with again, it might be the people that I'm in relationship with, or the people I work with, and just checking, am I content with how I'm holding them in my mind? Is there anything I would like to adjust? And again, this is a room that it can be very useful to visit often. even on a daily basis, because sometimes what happens is something small happens in a relationship and then we're alone. And what do? We let it dwell in our mind and we keep turning it over and it becomes actually much bigger than it is. And so if we practice cleaning up the room often, keeping it tidy, not letting even small negative memories remain in that room, then it means we don't get build up, because we all know what it's like to clean up a room when it's really untidy. We just like want to close the door. So if we visit it often, and then we check the beliefs that we're holding people with in our mind, are they healthy? Are they positive? And then we can quickly repair any perhaps negative beliefs we might be holding about them. And so if you're ready, I'd like to invite you to go out of this room. Take a deep breath. And we're going to move on to another room, which I think is really important at this time of the year. We're about to welcome 2021 and a new year and open a new chapter of our life. And so in order to really enter a new chapter in 2021, it's very good to go into the room of the past. And it may be 2020, and what a year it's been, but it may be other past memories that we're holding. So I'd like to invite you to enter this room. And in here, it's almost like our private museum. We store all the memories of our past. And I know, you know, when I think about my grandmother, you know, she was someone that I didn't spend a lot of time with. But when she was in her 90s, she was taking antidepressants and, you know, living in a very, very beautiful place with a lot of good care, family support, but antidepressants. And I think the key thing was that when she went into the room of her past, she dwelled on only the negative memories and she allowed them to stay inside that room and her mind, and they became her experience instead of enjoying those final, you know, moments or years of her life. She was reliving the negative memories and, yes, unfortunately, greatly reduced the quality of her life and also the experience of her relatives when they went to see her. And so when I enter that room, I check how I am displaying the past in that room. Am I able to display it in a way that gives me comfort and happiness? And it's really a huge topic. It's a huge topic. But if I'm not holding it in a way that gives me comfort, if I'm not able to draw something of value out of it, then I will feel at uncomfortable, at ill ease or uneasy. And there won't be that peace. So when I am alone, I won't feel good. And very often those memories will come. And so making the past my friend, you know, and this is a really big area. But as I'm entering 2021, I need to be able to draw beauty out of 2020. And I need to make sure that I'm not holding sorrow in my mind from other years and even more years. That room is filled with beautiful memories. And if there was something very, very difficult, I'm able to draw it and make it a lesson. And I'd like to just give one example. I remember one New Year some years ago, I had an experience where I trusted someone to edit a book. And the book for me was very valuable. It was about, you know, a support book for people that were really terminally ill. But we had to edit quite a lot of one chapter because of, you know, the publishing request. And so I worked a lot, took hours and hours. And then I asked the translator, please, you know, go through and be really careful with this chapter and, you know, edit it and translate the edits. And, you know, when we got the book back from the publisher, it was so exciting to have that book. And I felt so excited. And then as I thumbed through the book, I realized that the chapter that I'd spent hours and hours editing, it wasn't there. It literally wasn't there. And I thought, oh, my goodness. Actually, I probably thought, oh, my God, what happened? And, you know, I went to that person that I trusted with the editing and I said, you know, what happened? And you know what he said? You know, he said, well, look, I looked at it. I thought it would have taken a lot of time to, you know, work through all those edits and retranslate. And so I thought, let me leave it out. I'll save time. And that was really a big test for me. And I can't say that I passed 100%. I really spent at least 2 days really in reaction and negativity. And I felt, well, that's it. I can't trust people. How can he? How could he? Da, 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 da. Like I'm a victim. On and on. You know the story? And then, and it was actually the same time of year. It was New Year. I went, oh, actually, I can trust everyone with something because I'd started to feel, you know, I can't trust that one, that one, that one. And then I thought, no, I can trust everyone with something, but it's me that has to choose the level with which to trust each one. And I trusted someone that was, I think, only 21 years old with something that was just too big for them. And that was not their mistake. That was mine. I gave too much responsibility to that young person. And when I realized that, I went, oh, my goodness, right? So I wasted 2 days of my life and created a lot of negativity, probably made myself sick. But then I had this amazing feeling, wow. You know, we spend a lot of our life being a lawyer and trying to prove our case of why we're right and everyone else is wrong. And when I went beyond that, I found myself in a very beautiful space. And I spent the new year writing a book. And, you know, it was a very beautiful experience of really exploring what honesty is and what dishonesty is. So what I mean to say, that was a really difficult event. And it meant that book that was published, some thousand copies, that most important chapter was not there. But, you know, it is what it is. And I couldn't change that. But I felt like I grew so much from that event. And I turned it around. And so when I think about that memory, it's such a beautiful one now. But if I hadn't have worked with it, I could have lived my whole life not trusting people and always looking to see what I can't trust in someone. So that's what I mean. It's in our hands. And I'm sure you've worked with this. But if not, if there is something in that room that is giving you discomfort, work with it now. Turn it around. And, you know, in the holiday and the time you have over New Year, continue to work so that when you enter that room of the museum of your memories, you can feel totally content. And if there's adversity, you can also see the beauty in it. So let's just spend a minute, and just have another look around that room. all the memories, when I look at them, are they serving me well? And if not, it's in my hands as the master of that room to turn that memory around, as challenging as it was. And I'd just like to finish with, you know, just one story. Many years ago, I was doing a training, first working in values education in Cambodia. And we did the first training with quite a big budget with UNESCO, with teachers in the capital of that country, Phnom Penh. And then after that, one friend from UNESCO and myself, we put $100 in each, and we decided we are going to do a very simple training. And that training was for former Khmer Rouge soldiers. So these were people that had been some of the last to be coaxed down from the mountains. They were hiding there for many, many years after the war. They were very simple people, and they were being rehabilitated. They were given farmland. And so we went along for a very simple training in a place with a dirt floor, and we're doing this values education program. And midway through the first morning of the training, my friend from UNESCO said, you know, your translator in this training, his name was Sambo, he actually is from this area. The area was Kampot in the south of Cambodia. And, you know, he grew up here. And in fact, during the war, every member of his family except himself was murdered by the Khmer Rouge. All their gold was taken, their house, everything. And I said, oh, wow. And he's volunteered to come and do this training. And then the friend, whose actual name was also Sambo, which is strange because she's a woman, he's a man, but that's the way it is in Cambodia. They use the name for both genders. And she said, you know, in fact, his family was killed by these same people that you are training right now. And I went, wow, wow. And there he was, this young man beside me, and his family had been killed by these former soldiers. And I asked my friend, does he know that? Because he's volunteered to come on his holiday time free as a volunteer to train these people. And she said, yes, he knows that these are the people. Can you imagine that? And I just went, wow. And of course, I continued the training. And at the end of the day, I invited him to sit with me at a very simple cafe on a river. You know, I don't think it was the Mekong, but it was a small river. And we talked, and I asked him, what is it that can allow you to come back and train the people that murdered your family and took all the wealth? And he said, you know, I know in my heart for my country that we have to go higher. We have to aim for something better, higher than revenge. And I know that my family would want this. I know in my heart that they would want me to try and help these people. And I know that these people were brainwashed at that time. They were not in their right mind. And so, you know, I thought that is amazing. What could be more challenging than that? And yet there was that young man smiling and bringing something new and bringing a new chapter for the country. So whatever memories we hold in that room, let me do the work and make sure that I hold them in a way where I can see the beauty out of the difficulty. And I think when we work in these three main rooms, the self, relationships, and the past, This really helps us feel at ease, at comfort when we are alone. So these are some of the things that I wanted to share, and I hope that in some way they are of comfort, of use to you in your life. And I wonder if there's any questions. And thank you for listening. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Would you lead us in a meditation? Just a short meditation?
Oh, sure. Yes, sorry, Ati. Yes.
Okay.
So, again, if we can, and most of us, I think, are probably sitting down. And just first, as you enter the meditation, if you can become aware of your breathing. And you might be very familiar with correct breathing, but often when we sit a lot, which many of us tend to, we start to breathe in a shallow way. And that also increases our tension, and it also gives us the wrong balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide. So really feel you're taking the air in, and you're filling the lower part of your lungs, which means your stomach muscles will stretch out and expand. So please take a few deep breaths in this way. And now breathing in this way very deeply and filling the stomach and lungs. And each breath breathing in peace and calmness. I see in front of me these three very special rooms. The room of the self. And I really feel my own unique value. No one can be me but me. I feel love and appreciation for myself. And I notice this allows the mind to slow down, to calm. And as my thoughts reduce and slow, I feel a sense of silence and stillness. And I enjoy this feeling of having space with myself and quality thoughts with myself. And I move to the room of my relationships, seeing each image of the important people in my life and smiling at each image. And appreciating their value. And knowing that each one of them is living their life in the very best way possible, doing the very best they can within their own capacity. So really feeling a sense of blessing them, even though they may not be with me. I bless them through my mind, and that also reaches them. And again, smiling at each photo. And finally, the room of the past. Again, looking at that room and being able to draw beauty and deep, deep contentment that I did whatever I could at that time. I responded in the best possible way. And holding that memory in a very beautiful way. And stepping out of that room and bringing my mind back to the present. And knowing whenever I choose, I can enter these rooms. I can clean them, I can decorate them. And I'm feeling more and more comfortable to be with myself in my own company. And I know this is preparation for when I'm once again in the company of others more. Thank you.
Thank you, Trish. So yes, there's a number of questions that have come in. So let me begin, if I may. Any advice for elderly experiencing loneliness due to being widowed and their families living on the opposite side of the world?
Thank you so much. And again, I really appreciate that situation. My mother is on the opposite side of the world and also widowed. And so I appreciate this situation a lot. I think the same thing, enjoying these rooms and the relationship with the self and making sure that I'm holding very beautiful memories inside me. And so when I connect with my family, now according to the means of science and Zoom and WhatsApp, etc., appreciating the quality of that connection that we have. Although we're not physically there, if I hold a feeling of appreciation that right now, more than any other time in history, we can connect in such a way that it's almost like being in the same room. Of course, it's not exactly the same, but putting appreciation on the way that we can connect according to the limited time. And when I appreciate, then I enjoy that connection. And I think each time I connect with my family, let me bring with me some stories of happiness that I can share with them. Let me spend time collecting stories of happiness, things that I can say that are uplifting, so that when we do connect with each other, it's a conversation that has a very high vibration. And we're not talking about what's not there, but we're talking about what is there and really honoring each other in that moment. Because I think sometimes the challenge is now, because there are so many challenging things, when we connect with each other, we talk about the challenges, we talk about the limits of not being together. But if I spend my time preparing for the conversations so that I bring to the conversation like very beautiful stories and high quality thoughts, so that when we have that exchange, although there is a limit, it can be one that is very high quality, so that when I leave it and when I say goodbye again and that relative on the other side says goodbye, we both feel satisfied. So the memory of that conversation will be a very sweet one that I will hold in my mind. And then again, the next conversation, let me prepare and bring richness, no complaining, only talking about valuable things. So the memory of the conversation that I store, again, will be a very positive one. So that's something. I mean, I'm sure there's many other aspects, but that's one thought connected with that question.
Thank you. The next question is, I've never truly had close friendships, bonds with anyone, and feel I have just acquaintances. I've been chasing after this bond of, you know, deep friendship, but it never works out. And I felt lonely and isolated in this area of my life. In the pursuit of looking for friendship, I've isolated myself from my wider family. Any advice for this situation?
No, I really appreciate that. And I think so often nowadays we, you know, feel that exchanges can be quite superficial. And I think, you know, you're giving an answer, because you're saying that you've isolated yourself from your family, and they could be the friends. They could be the friends. And, you know, I know for me, excuse me, I'm very close friends with my sister. And growing up, I didn't really recognize that. I thought, oh, she's my sister. But then I thought, wow, actually, she's a really good friend. And so when you're saying that, what about reconnecting with your family, and, you know, also seeing that they're human beings beyond family, and that physical connection, because you're talking about it, you're noting it, that you feel isolated from them. Why not rebuild that friendship? Because they know you more than anyone. And so it can be, you know, really a very genuine one. That's one thing. And I think also being genuine and being real and not being afraid to talk about who you are. Because, you know, sometimes we just sort of operate on such a superficial level. And I know sometimes, you know, people that come to learn meditation, often they've, you know, they meet a friend when they come to learn and they go, I didn't know you were interested in this kind of thing. And I didn't know you were interested. And it's like they've been friends for years. And even recently, my mother's closest friend was, as she died. And before she died, I was in New Zealand. I took my mother to see her. And I said, you know, Mum, does she have a religion? Does she believe in God? And my mother had been friends with her for like 60 years, and my mother, or more, 65 years. My mother said, I don't know. And I said, well, Mum, do you mind if we ask her? We know that she's terminally ill. And we had this amazing conversation that my mother had never had in 65 years. And the friend said, yes, of course I believe in God. And, you know, I also believe in another life. I believe in the soul. And I think, so be who you are and maybe reconnect with your family. There may be something in that, because you're bringing it up. That would be my sense.
Wow. Thank you. The next question is a simple one. The names of your books, please. Are they in English or are they only in Vietnamese?
They're only in Vietnamese, except for, yes, so there's three of them in Vietnamese, But there is another one, but I don't know that it would be. It is something I've co-written, and it's on values education for those in drug rehabilitation. So that may not be one that, you know, it's more a training. It's a training program. But the other books are published and available in the bookstores here, but no, they're definitely in Vietnamese. I'm sorry.
Okay, so I'm going to say to you this, if it's possible, if you could drop us a name of the Vietnamese and the one non-Vietnamese, then if people need it, we can send it out to them. Because I know we have some people connected via who are Vietnamese, so they may enjoy okay. that. That would be
to do that.
Thank you.
Yes.
The next one is, do you have any tips for getting rid of nasty feelings from some photos that exist? You were talking about the photos in the room, or basically the past.
Yes, yeah, I do. I work a lot with this, and I work with four steps. The first one, and you maybe don't like it when I say this, acceptance. And acceptance does not mean agree. Acceptance means that this is part of my story. It's one page in one chapter of my book. And if I don't accept, I can't turn the next page. I can't move on. So accept that it's part of my story. And accept doesn't mean that I like it. Accept means that I work with reality. And the next one, understand. Understand why it happened. And, you know, it may have been something from you, like the story I shared about the honesty thing. Sometimes we're like, but then when we look at it, actually it's, oh, it was me. Or maybe not, but understand perhaps a weakness on that other person's side. Understand if you can. And then learn a lesson. Like I shared that from that story about honesty, and there's other stories, but perhaps not time for that, but there will be something that you can learn. And for me, you know, yes, I had an experience of a relative, you know, being an alcoholic, and moving from a victim, I moved into, okay, I'm going to help people in recovery from drugs. And based on that, I co-authored that training program. So using whatever it is to learn from it and grow. We grow from adversity if we have the courage to work with it and use it. It can be something amazing, and you can help people a lot. And then open the door of your mind and let it go. Let it go. So these four steps, and they really, really work. Absolutely. You just do them. They do. Repeat them and feel them. And maybe you might even take a day before you can get through step one, and that's fine. And these steps I'm very happy to send to Aarti. I think I have something on this in English.
That would be brilliant. Thank you. We could easily forward that on to everybody for sure. Thank you. Here's another question. I have a life partner, and I'm very grateful for this relationship. It's deep and meaningful. But I don't have any other close friends or family, or I'm not close to anyone else in that sense. And as a result, I have a deep sense of social anxiety. What would you suggest?
You know, I think it can be good just to move in small steps. You know, just I'm not sure how the anxiety is playing out in your life, but my sense is maybe whatever the thing is that challenges you, just do a small step. If it's, you know, going to a place and meeting new people, do it in a way that will stretch you but not overwhelm you. So look at it, look at your situation, and start challenging yourself with small steps, and support yourself with a lot of positive talk. So I would say spend some time in the room of the self and make sure that you are living in the center. not inferior, not superior, but with true self-esteem. Build that, and then challenge yourself to go into social places and events, but not overwhelming ones. And then once you get a success, appreciate yourself and then challenge yourself a little bit more.
Okay, I've got three more questions. Have you got time for them?
I do. We are
okay. Lovely, thank you. So you, at the beginning of your talk, you talked about transcending loneliness and enjoy being on your own, being alone. Do you have steps on how to transcend being lonely? And how do you enjoy being alone?
So this is a very good one. So I think what I noticed, what I observed, and when I've, it's been lovely actually, because we decided that we would have this talk several weeks ago. And, I live in a country where almost no one lives alone. You're surrounded by people all the time. It's like really all the time. And so it's quite interesting, this talk, when I'm living in this country. But I was watching, so I observed myself, and very occasionally I would have a sense of that kind of feeling that might be associated with loneliness. And what I did was I looked behind it, and I found that around it was a feeling of rejection. Now, I don't know that it's the same for everyone, but it can be that we're moving into being feeling a little bit inferior, and that we're being rejected in some way. It wasn't a logical thing, but it was the feeling I noticed. So I just talked to myself. I said, no, this is something that you're creating in your mind. No one is rejecting. It's some feeling that you're creating. And now I don't want to feed that. I want to understand it's coming up, and I acknowledge it, and now I'm going to go higher. Actually, I accept myself, and others also accept me, and the situation is one where I will be alone in my own company for a while, and let me use that time, because very soon I will be with company of others again, and let me use the time alone so I strengthen myself, so I bring quality when I come back into relationships. So that's what I mean by transcend. I accepted the emotion I was having. I didn't reject it. Oh, I'm feeling this. And I worked at understanding why, and then going higher beyond it. And sometimes, sometimes we might want to listen to ourselves, and just, if I'm saying I'm feeling lonely, so just breathe deeply, because often we hold that in tension in our body. Breathe first, that will release the emotion. And then just repeat back, or even write it down. So I'm feeling lonely. And breathe and let yourself say, yeah, I am. And then again, yeah, you're really feeling lonely. So you're actually being an active listener to yourself, and you'll find after about three or four rounds, the mind will become calm, quiet. You've listened to yourself, and the mind's been acknowledged, and then you can go beyond, you can transcend. So I don't mean just saying, I'll get over it. No, not in that way. I think we need sometimes to acknowledge it. If it's a deep feeling, listen to yourself. So you are feeling lonely. Breathe, acknowledge again, and you'll find the mind will go, yes. And then it will become still, and then you can go with something higher. Well, let me use this time to do something interesting, or develop a new skill or a new talent, or study something I've always wanted to, but I haven't had time to, or research something. And yeah, like that.
And how do you enjoy, or how do you learn to be alone and enjoy that?
I think by really the steps of first being very happy with myself, content with my own company, you know, and talking to myself in a way that's very kind and loving. Because actually there's a dialogue going on with ourselves all the time. But, you know, often that dialogue is not a positive one. And so when I'm alone, it becomes almost like more apparent about that dialogue, and I feel uncomfortable. So making sure my internal dialogue is very kind and very loving and very friendly. You know, it really, yeah, that I think that's really important.
Thank you. Last two questions. Can you talk a little more about people living alone, both physically and emotionally, craving a partner to share their life with when they don't have one?
Yes, I also really appreciate that, and that is something that if we continue, you know, to crave that, that can create a lot of discomfort inside. And so, you know, I would say that, again, that conversation with yourself, not suppressing it, but even, you know, like a compassionate touch. I'm feeling I'm craving someone to be with me. And just acknowledging that, accepting that that is a feeling I'm having. And breathe. And again, if your mind is still running and I'm feeling sad and I'm whatever you're saying to yourself, breathe and listen. Repeat back what you're creating in your mind. So you are feeling sad, and you will find that the mind will calm down, and you'll be able to look then at building up that relationship with the self, making it stronger. And as you start creating a higher vibration, then that will also vibrate out. That will affect your conversations when you do come into conversation with other people, and it will raise the vibration of those conversations. I think sometimes we talk about wanting to be with others, but we need to think, what are we bringing into those conversations? So if I make my conversation with myself a supportive, positive one, then when I come into conversation with others, I will bring that quality into that conversation. And although it might not be a long one, I will feel satisfied. Because if I just spend my time with a neighbor and, you know, complaining about the weather, complaining about the situation, although I've had an interaction with someone else, how deeply in my heart will it satisfy me? So I think, yes, the craving can be there for relationship and sharing, but let me build myself and build the quality of interaction so that when I step away from the interaction, even though it might have been a short one, but I will feel satisfied and I'll feel I offered something of value. And that way I feel automatically that energy will expand out and I will expand in my interactions with others. But focusing on the quality first.
Lovely. And the final question, how can I turn this negative or unpleasant memory into a positive memory? I witnessed my father's end of life and the suffering he experienced. So how do I change that experience of a memory of suffering to something positive?
Yeah, thank you. And I, you know, I really empathize with that. And absolutely, you can change that. You absolutely can change that. So what I suggest is writing a letter to your father and just really write whatever you are feeling, write. And right now you're holding a moment that was very, very difficult at the end of his life, and you're holding suffering. Perhaps it was either his emotional or physical suffering or both. And that is covering the whole picture in your mind of your father. But what I would like to suggest is you write about that to your father, and then you go beyond that and you have a beautiful conversation with your father about the beautiful memories that you are holding in your life about him and what you learned from him and, you know, what he taught you, what he showed you, what you enjoyed together. And I've done this letter myself. I did it several months before my father passed away. It doesn't matter. It can be before or after. My siblings wrote after my father left or passed away. And it's such a beautiful thing to do. And your father, wherever he is now, in what form he's existing, and I'm sure it will be a very beautiful one, he will catch your vibration. He will catch your letter. And so absolutely he will hear it. It won't get lost. So there's a very beautiful way that you can turn that memory around and understand that, yes, that past, those final moments were challenging ones, but they're only one tiny piece of his whole story. And yes, there may be other challenges because that's a reality, but there'll be so much beauty. And I know for my father, you know, he was an alcoholic and there were many challenges that came out of that. But wow, when I went to write the letter, I realized I learned so much from him. And that process of writing the letter, it really changed. It covered any negative memory I had of him and his behavior. And I just feel so much gratitude. So yes, your father had a challenge. He had a difficult ending, but don't let that color the beauty of the life that he lived, and look for those memories and write them to him and thank him, you know, for being your father and what he taught you and what he gave you and what he sacrificed for you. You know, he will feel that deeply. And it's very important for you to do this, because if you hold that memory in a negative way, that I deeply believe will also forget, will influence him at some level. He will not want you to suffer. He will want you to have peace. And so he will also get peace by your having peace. So it's a beautiful gift you can do for the end of this year.
Wow, thank you very, very much, Trish. That was amazing. Gosh, I have to come back and interview you at another given time. Not just have you give a talk, but actually interview you and get some more pearls of wisdom that are not just insights, but real practical things that we can walk away with. So thank you, Trish, for taking that time with us.
It's really, really, Aarti, it's really my privilege. I feel very honored to be with everyone. And thank you for having me, and lots and lots and lots of love from my heart.